It's been 25 years since MTV created a social experiment that placed a handful of young adults in one residence and recorded every movement, conversation, and interaction 24 hours a day, and in doing so, created a whole television genre. Welcome to Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
I'm Joe Lee with the pop culture ambassador, Bob Thompson, director of the Blair Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University's Newhouse School. In May of 1992, MTV, known mostly for televising round-the-clock music videos, introduced American TV viewers to The Real World, a show that dealt with issues ranging from politics and religion to prejudice, sexuality, and substance abuse. With this show, MTV pretty much launched the modern reality TV genre. Isn't that right, Bob?
It is, and we would be really wrong to underestimate how important this show was. I mean, I think most people now think of it as this show on MTV where people are in the hot tub all the time. But when that came out in 92, there had been nothing like it. Most people point to An American Family over on PBS as being the first reality show. But American Family was just a documentary. They followed a real family around in their real house and when they went on real trips. That had been being done since the silent era. Nanook of the North, 1924, followed an Inuit family around. What The Real World did, which was totally different, was before they started making a documentary, they deliberately cast seven people who they knew were going to have conflicts that would have never otherwise known each other or lived in a place like that or been together. And then they put them all together in a place, and only then do they make the documentary. It was more a chemistry experiment than it was a drama. It would be like if you got a room full of kittens and you got a big bucket of nitroglycerin and put it at the edge of the table, and then you let the kittens out and see what happens. And that's exactly how The Real World worked. That was a big deal. You take a bogus situation, a set up artificial set of circumstances, and then make a documentary about it. And interestingly enough, The Real World was the first to do that back in 92, and they're still going after an awful lot of the other ones have come and gone.
Was there any strategy to choosing the city that they would set this up in, or was that just part of the marketing and pitch of it?
Well, I think it was to choose a city where they knew there would be stuff that would happen, where people could get around. Can you imagine, not to diss Syracuse, but doing Real World Syracuse would be kind of tough. They'd be waiting for buses an awful lot of the time. So New York, of course, was a natural first place. MTV was based in New York. It was right up the street. But then you look at the other cities like San Francisco and Miami and so forth. And every now and again, they choose a city that wouldn't work. The first time they did Boston wasn't too exciting. And then sometimes when the show started getting well known, Chicago, they wanted those guys out of there really badly. But generally, they were the kind of cities that you would expect 18 to 25-year-olds to want to be in.
What was it about this social experiment that just really hooked those 18 to 25-year-olds in there?
Part of it, I think, had to do with the fact that there were so few programs that actually really sounded like those people. By that time, you had Beverly Hills 90210. I guess that would kind of qualify, but that was a very narrow demographic of people that were represented. All of a sudden, with The Real World, you had people from different backgrounds. You had people with all kinds of different profiles. And because they didn't get scripts, they actually talked like people. I mean, usually we hear 18 to 25-year-olds saying words that were written by 50-year-old sitcom writers or drama writers. Here we got them actually talking. Now, by the time this starts in 1992, I'd already been teaching college for 10 or 11 years. And I have to admit, listening to a bunch of 18 to 24-year-olds sitting around self-righteously whining about their problems was not exactly what I wanted to hit as part of my entertainment regimen. I got plenty of it all day long listening to my students. But at the same time, even as someone that was outside of its demographic, there was something terribly compelling about that in the beginning. And they weren't profound discussions. A lot of it was just, I mean, these are kids talking about things. But in the, even in that first season, and we got it episode one of the first season, when one of the women from, I think she's from Alabama or something like that, and one of the other women, an African-American woman, has a beeper and their pager goes off. This was the time of pagers, mm-hmm. ye olden days. Can't see a pager now unless you go to Colonial Williamsburg. But anyway, her pager goes off, and this other woman immediately says, "Are you a drug dealer?" Now, as stupid as the conversation was that followed, it was an earnest conversation by young people about assumptions, about identity, and the real world before it became, you know, hot tub time machine, really had a lot of these conversations among earnest young people who really were, because they pretty much were all forced to live together, who were really working out some of these issues in some, granted, perhaps naive and sometimes annoying sorts of ways, but that show had a social thing going on mm-hmm. that I think was at times a good thing.
I think I ignored the first season, but it was that second and third season that really got me watching it. There were some memorable characters. One in particular was a guy named Puck.
Stick your finger in there.
He walks right by me, puts his finger in the peanut butter, just licks it and goes on.
I did it.
That is the same hand that he was wiping in his shirt because he got, you know, snuddled over it.
I'm getting my own food, man. I'm buying my own peanut butter, and everybody else can kiss my butt.
This was 1994, and he was such an in-your-face yeah. kind of person that, you know, it was the kind of character or individual that you loved to hate. And there were some memorable confrontations between Puck, a surfer dude type skateboarder, and an individual by the name of Pedro Zamora, who was one of the first openly gay sort of, I don't know if I want to call him a character, but there was a person on television, openly gay, suffering from HIV. And you can imagine the confrontation in that house around that kind of issue, which was, you know, new and unknown and scary for a lot of people. And someone as abrasive as Puck, that's when the show's popularity really took off.
Yeah, 1994, Real World 3, that was in San Francisco. That was the Real World's magnum opus. That was their most important season, I think, to date. And they've done 32 now since in the 25 years they've been on. And for all of the reasons that you said, you know, now when you describe Puck as, and when you said he was a dude, I thought you were going to say another word that starts with the sound do. And he was that, too. You know, now you describe his character, and you think, well, so what else is new? There's a million obnoxious, outspoken, arrogant, whatever people. But in 1994, there wasn't. Real World does reality TV in 1992. They do their Road Rules spinoff. The networks don't get around to this stuff until Survivor in 2000.
I mean, we had the squeaky clean Huxtables.
And Growing Pains, yes. Family Ties, the Huxtables. It was like Father Knows Best yes. in color. Mm-hmm. Before all these Real Housewives and all these things we saw, Puck was a character like none we'd ever seen mm-hmm. before. He was really obnoxious and so proud of being obnoxious. So in that episode, of course, that causes a big crisis. The house gathers together and they vote him off. Yeah. The Real World didn't have a vote off the right. island idea. Right. They were all supposed to live there, but they kicked him out. And, of course, one of the other people, characters, I suppose, is an appropriate thing, was Pedro. Mm-hmm. And, again, this is 94 when the research on HIV had not gone nearly as far. HIV had only been identified, I think, in 82, mm-hmm. so a dozen years earlier. And, for the most part, this was still, in many yeah. people's eyes, a death sentence. And, in fact, Pedro Zamora died within, like, a day, I think, of the final episode of his yeah. season airing. Here's an example, though, with Pedro. Not only the drama of how he didn't get along with others like Puck, mainly Puck in that season, but what a social role that program played.
You know, I go from months where I don't think much about it, and I'm just, you know, I'm working really hard, and I'm going all over, you know, the country.
This is not a moral issue. This is a health issue, and we have to look at it from that standpoint.
Pedro, for many people in America who were watching that show, was the first HIV positive character they'd ever met. And very likely for many people who were watching that show may have been the first openly gay person that mm-hmm. they had ever met. And unlike Puck, Pedro was a nice,
yeah.
rational, kind, likable character. So there was that sense in which a face, a human face, was put to HIV as well as to a gay man. And he became a real beloved character. When MTV came, Real World came to Syracuse to talk to me and my classes about the importance of the show. And we had all kinds of students who said, you know, up until then, I thought one thing about gay men and about HIV, and Pedro completely turned my, you know, my mind around. My guess is that Pedro on that show raised more consciousnesses mm-hmm. positively than all kinds of the stuff that would go on in public schools that were trying to educate people and all the rest. His being who he was really made people put a human face to that. Bill Clinton, of course, acknowledged him for that, and he became something of a celebrity, both while he was alive, but also after he had passed.
Yeah, Real World is credited for what we know today as reality TV. It spawned the likes of Big Brother and Survivor all these social experiments. I do remember that was the first show that I actually binge watched, and it wasn't that we had DVRs or anything back then, but they used to run these things all day long leading up to like New Year's Eve or New Year's Day.
I'd forgotten about that. You're right.
They would run an entire season, and my wife and I would just not get out of bed. We would be like, you know, one more. Let's just watch one more. It was such a compelling show.
But so you were an early binger when you had to do the marathons.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Very interesting.
Speaking of binge watching, we'll offer our picks for some binge-worthy TV. And Bob's going to tell us about a show that he thinks we might be missing out on, so stay tuned. This is Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee with Bob Thompson, and this is your invitation to binge.
You don't need to open this door, man, for a huff and puff. Come on now, by the hands of your chinny chin chin.
Omar, you best roll out. We up in here with the Mac tank.
Oh, I think's not, Terrell. I think's not. Y'all might need to think this through and stop wasting my time. Because Omar can come back tomorrow. And the next day. And the next day. And I will put a bullet in all y'all behind what happened right now. You heard?
Most people who love television know where that music comes from, and it brings fond memories from when it was on. But The Wire, that comes from, played from 2004 to 2008. It's kind of getting to be TV history. And if you are someone who never saw The Wire, either the first time around or in those box sets that everybody was using back then, this is still one of the greatest television series ever made for American television. And it's great for binging because it's only 60 episodes long. If you're a hardcore binger and you're watching like five episodes a day, you can get through this pretty quickly. It was five seasons of usually around 13 episodes per season, and each one had kind of a theme. There was a season about the education system in Baltimore, the schools. There was a season about the press, one about politics. Subtle, an incredibly great and interesting cast, and still I'd put in my top three or five greatest TV shows ever made. If you haven't seen it, you are in for a real treat.
Yeah, I find it amazing because it was not as popular when it was airing as it is now. And it was hard for me to understand that because of my universe. Now, I'm born and raised in Baltimore. Everyone that I know watched The Wire. And so when I speak to someone who says, you know, I've never seen that, my jaw hits the
How
hits
could
the
that
floor.
Be?
How can that be? It is such a gritty and true to life portrayal of the Baltimore streets, and I can tell you that, because there is a unique way to the way that Baltimoreans speak, and I like that the fact that the show was bringing in real, you know, local actors from the Baltimore area to play on that show, so it gave it that real good flavor. In fact, one of my high school best friends played a minor part on the show. So I would talk to him and get some inside scoop on the production and all that good stuff. So it is a phenomenal show. HBO, you can get it on HBO Go, I'm sure. It is definitely worth revisiting if you've never even if you watched just half a season, go back and watch it again with new perspective.
It's worth watching the fifth time in a row, too, for that matter.
Yeah.
Every time you see it, you see new things.
My invitation to binge is on what has to be one of my favorite all-time series, and that is the Game of Thrones. There are seven seasons. You have everything from White Walkers to Khaleesi's to dragons to kings and queens and drama and backstabbing and wildfire. Probably one of the craziest television scenes of all time in the Red Wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if, you know, book readers knew it was coming, but those who are fresh to the show who never read the books, it was shocking.
On my honor as a Tully, on my honor as a Stark, let him go, or I will cut your wife's throat.
I'll find another.
The thing I do like about the HBO production is it strays enough away from the books that it's still fresh.
Keep you on
for book readers as well. So that's my invitation to binge. Season 7 starts in July. It's going to be abbreviated because I think of weather conditions and shooting. And the show is, I think, now ahead of George R.R. Martin's series. So we're still waiting for him now to catch up with the series with his books. And we hope he does that soon. There are whole communities out there built around this show. I'm a part of two Facebook communities that are built around Game of Thrones. So it is such a cultural phenomenon.
Well, I have to say, I've read the books, and I think the HBO production so far exceeds the books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in terms of Game of Thrones is to television of a quality that the book is not so much when you compare it to other books. Here's my only problem with Game of Thrones is I don't think I'm quite smart enough for that show. And I've seen probably every episode at least twice. If you were to right now give me a Game of Thrones quiz and ask me who was related to this and who's part of this house and who's part of this, maybe I would get a C on it. But it would be totally possible that I could fail it. But even though I remain constantly confused when I'm watching portions of that show, it really doesn't matter. It works on so many different other levels that once that Red Wedding starts going down, you know enough to be absolutely amazed and enchanted by it.
Well, I'm happy to report that those quizzes actually do exist, and I'm an A student.
Oh, congratulations.
This is Pop Life. Is there a television show that you're passionate about and you want to share with us? Hit me up on Twitter at jblee883 or leave a comment on the Pop Life program page at waer.org. Looking for something else to listen to? Check out Jazz Fest 35, the best of WAER sports or science on the radio, all available on demand at waer.org.